Episode 11, The Realization. I can't stress enough how much nature aids your recovery. There's no greed or selfishness in nature. It's there to remind us how things are meant to be, how simple and beautiful life can be, how things should be and how we should appreciate and be at one with it. Money has no value in nature. It's one of the only times in life when everybody's equal. Whether you're rich, poor, healthy or unhealthy, it doesn't matter. It's about freeing your mind. It gives us the opportunity to think, to find the solutions to our problems, to be better people. The fresh air, the exercise and the scenery gives you the freedom, the feel-good factor, to be at one with your inner self and the chance to think deeply. The answers are all within you. Just open your mind and find them. Nature will help you find them. It's the penultimate day and I've got a 2-hour drive to the very southern tip of the island to an area of slate. The south of the island is a lot greener and is more pleasing on the eye. The roads on Skye are quite open, but this is the first time that I've spent a considerable amount of time driving through country lanes and tracks, until the sat-nav brings me to a tiny piece of land with 4 cars parked on it. It still looks like I'm a good distance from the coast. This can't be right. I'm still miles away. It doesn't help when I walk to the gate and notice the sign warning bulls are roaming free. I start the trek along the rough track, wary of the bulls at every turn. It's a bright day but cool. I spot countless numbers of cairns on the hilltops as I walk. I've no idea where I'm going. I'm just following the track, hoping it will take me to the coast. Again, the freedom of being out in nature, alone, just aimlessly wandering in your own little adventure, feels amazing. After all the stress and heartache over the last 7 months, to be able to do things on your own is starting to feel a bit more natural. I've had to force the issue though. I've had to grab the bull by the horns and hold on tight. There's nothing heroic about it. It's simply a sink or swim moment. You've been forced into a position through none of your own fault or want, where the most precious thing in your life has been taken from you. It's one of life's tests, and the question is, how are you going to react, sink or swim? Eventually I reach the coast. There are no roads. There's the odd little cottage and the rough track I've been walking on is the only access in and out. The sea is clear but very rocky underfoot. I take advantage and go for a quick dip. It's so refreshingly cold, it instantly makes your mind alert. It's just amazing. I can see a cairn on the top of the rock formation, so I climb it and have an amazing view out to sea. Again, just like on the first day at the old manor store, I imagine who would have stood up here thousands of years ago. Climbing down, I notice a small recess in the rock where the sea wades in. I sit on the edge watching and listening as the crystal clear water slowly washes up against the side of the rock. I could sit here all day, pondering. After a while of enjoying the serenity, I head back along the track to a sign by a gate that I'd passed earlier, as I want to know where it leads. I find it leads to the most beautiful little sandy beach with the sea slowly lapping up on the shore. If you saw an advert for a Caribbean holiday, bar the palm trees, this is it. Golden sands and turquoise seas, amazing. I'm finding it quite hard to believe in fact. There's 2 other couples on the beach with their bubble coats on. God knows what they must have thought as they saw me strip off and dive into the sea. The water was so cold, but totally calm and crystal clear. The sun was shining and I was in my element. I stayed reasonably close to shore, just relaxing in the water and diving under, but all the while I had a feeling I was being watched. I was. I stood up and looked out to sea to find 2 seals watching me, approximately 20 to 30 metres away, their heads perfectly still in the water as if they were sat up. Nature, it's a beautiful thing. Earlier, as I walked up the beach, I'd passed a large rock formation. Before heading back to the car park, I decided that I would climb it to gain a bird's eye view of the beach and the coastline. It wasn't particularly hard to scramble up, but obviously great care was needed. The view of the beach from the summit was absolutely stunning. I feel like a young adventurer. I don't think I would have done this when Julie was alive. Not that she ever stopped me doing anything. Yes, I used to go camping on a regular basis with the kids, but this was a different world to camping. I'm doing things I've never done before. I feel totally carefree. The doors of opportunity are always unlocked, but it's up to us to push those doors open. So I'm stood on top of this rock formation. The sun is shining, the view of the sea and coastline is stunning, and I feel on top of the world. What could be better? Then in a flash, violent hailstorm batters me. This is the Isle of Skye. This is nature reminding me that it's in control. I quickly find the way I ascended and make a hasty retreat back down to ground level. It's a long walk back to the car and an even longer drive back to the cottage. It's been another hell of a day and one to remember. The long drive each day gives me plenty of extra time to think. I know I'm feeling more solid in myself, in my thinking, controlling my emotions. I'm executing my plan while making a new plan for the future. Momentum is slowly building in a controlled manner. I'm getting used to this new life and starting to like it, and most importantly, I'm starting to comprehend that it's not wrong to enjoy my new life. I'm not being disrespectful to Julie. In fact, I'm being totally respectful to her by moving forward as this is what she would want. The seesaw is slowly levelling out. 7 months ago, the weight of sorrow totally outweighed any happiness I might have had. But I've slowly begun to realise, understand and accept what's actually happened, and as the sorrow slowly evaporates, hope and light shines and a future is formed. The light at the end of the tunnel is bright. That evening back at the cottage, Helen asks if I would like to have dinner with her and her husband Alistair, their daughter Molly and her boyfriend Hugh. This is normally something that I would politely decline, but instead I graciously accept the invitation. Hugh's a bit of a cook and has made an array of vegetarian dishes. It was such a relaxed atmosphere around the table, a real family gathering. They each show a great love and knowledge of the island, even though none of them are natives. It was a wonderful night and an experience I will always cherish. That night I await with a start. The answer to a question that has been brought up during dinner is as clear as day to me. It's so obvious and explains a major mystery in life. This happens to me at times. I await with an answer or a solution to something, but this time it's a little different, as this time it's an answer to a spiritual mystery. The morning brings my last full day and a 45-minute drive to one of the most northerly points on the island, the magnificent Kerang. This formation of rock has a circular trail of about 7 kilometres and an elevation of approximately 400 metres. Luckily, it was the best weather I'd had since arriving on Skye, and clear blue skies and a nice temperature to walk. Kerang offers unbelievable views from the off. The array of different shapes and sizes of rock formations, along with the magnificent views of the mountains, coast and islands, make it a place I feel privileged to have hiked on such a glorious day. Halfway around the trail, I took a diversion and sat on a rock near the cliff edge. I took out my burner, made a cup of tea and ate my lunch while marvelling at the landscape. Free as a bird, a wonderful feeling. Sat there, thinking about my time on Skye. I reminisced about the place I'd seen, the things that had happened to me, the wisdom I'd gained and the freedom I felt. I felt so different to the person who arrived on the island 6 days earlier. I'd achieved so much, and really, I can't express my gratitude to this island bar to say it will always be a part of me. The last night in the cottage is full of thought, while sat watching and listening to the flames of the fire flicker and crackle for the last time. I could stay here forever. The cottage has been perfect, and being here and meeting Helen and her family was meant to be. The following morning, I pack my bags, say my goodbyes, and start the long trek home. On my way home, feeling totally rejuvenated by the way the trip has gone and the lessons that I've learned, something occurs to me. Maybe one of the most important things in my life. Something that makes total sense and something I feel I must do. I must share my story. I need to tell people how I not only survived but thrived. I can help people who have lost their loved ones or who are just struggling in life. Show them how to turn any form of sorrow, hurt or confusion around and teach them how to live life again. How to be positive and help to enable them to open their eyes and find the answers. To love life again. This isn't a new idea. Around 2 or 3 years earlier, I came home from work and told Julie that I'd made a decision today. If I ever become blind or disabled so I couldn't work in the construction industry, then I was going to do public speaking on positivity and how to control your energies. Julie, who could be quite black and white in her thinking and didn't like change, quietly agreed. That conversation suddenly came into my mind on the journey home. I thought about the last 7 months and how I'd now turned this tragedy around. It started to make me think, but the thing that gave me the assurance that I needed to pursue it was I knew my guardian angel was suggesting that I did it. It was my first thought, to change my path of life. I knew that Julie's death wasn't in vain if I could help others stand up straight again, to get their lives back on track, to smile again when they think of their deceased loved ones. Helping people is what makes me happy. It all made sense. It's a numbers game. I've lost one life, but I can give so many people their lives back. It's a no-brainer. It's beautiful, in fact. I think of my son and daughter and how they've gained strength from their mother's death. They could have easily crumbled or been left with major issues. They both showed no weakness. They both stood up straight and refused to look for pity. They never hid away. They both thrived from being placed in an unfavourable position. Neither of them are spiritual or religious. They found a strength tucked away inside them, strength they didn't know they had, that had laid dormant for all those years, and when their mum died, they found that strength, brought it to the surface, and became better, stronger, and wiser people. And how did this happen? Because we all refused to be a burden on each other. We stuck together and showed each other strength. Sometimes you need somebody else's strength to discover your own. My son and daughter made us both proud, and the loss of their mother brought the family even closer. Julie will look down on her children with tremendous pride. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Something that Julie would have known a good while ago, and something that I've just become aware of, is my daughter's pregnant with our first grandchild. It's very early on in the pregnancy and she didn't want to say anything until week 12, but we would have known something was wrong when she didn't drink alcohol in New York. It's peculiar. The thought of being a grandparent, but a beautiful one at the same time. Where there's death, there's life. In 3 weeks' time, we're all heading off to New York. That mental thought of finally releasing Julie's physical body. Taking her from her home for the very last time and releasing her thousands of miles away was upsetting. But I know it's what she wants, and I also know that when I do it, I'm showing total respect to Julie's spirit, and I'll be happy in myself because Julie's happy. Julie loved the holidays and New York was her favourite city. The week before leaving for New York, each time I passed Julie's memorial in the lounge, I would tap the top of the box that held her ashes and ask her if she was looking forward to a holiday. This went on all week, but on the day before we left, I went out into the back garden to feed the fish for the last time. As I walked down the steps to the pond, I stood on a perfect white fluffy feather. I thought nothing of it as it was away from the house, but on the way back I picked it up. When I got close to the house, I put it between the tip of my finger and my thumb and quickly blew it as hard as I could up in the air. I expected the feather to fly off in some wild direction and that would be the end of it, but instead it flew up high but stayed very close to where I was stood. It slowly floated down in front of my eyes, and when it got to eye level, it levitated for I would say at least 3 to 4 seconds, then continued to fall to the ground. I picked up the feather, walked into the house, tapped the top of the box of ashes and said, "So you are looking forward to your holiday then?" 3 weeks after returning home from the Isle of Skye, I'm stood in Manchester Airport with my son, daughter, their partners and Julie's ashes, waiting to board a flight to JFK. I have mixed emotions. This trip was originally booked for April 2020, for Julie and I to take everyone to New York. Then COVID struck and lockdown followed. The trip was cancelled. Now 8 months after Julie's death, we're finally heading for the Big Apple. Though there are mixed emotions, I'm looking forward to spending some quality time with the family, showing them New York, and for us to show Julie respect by taking her to where she wants her ashes scattering in her favourite city on earth. We're on vacation for 10 days, so we have plenty of time to relax and enjoy the experience. There's no need to rush. When we came to New York the last time, we stayed in a studio apartment in Manhattan, but this time we're staying in a large 3-bedroom, 3-bathroom apartment in Brooklyn. The area isn't as nice as the reviews claimed. In fact, it's a bit ropey, but to me, that just adds to the experience of New York. I unpacked and immediately put Julie's ashes in the front windowsill in the kitchen diner so she can look out. Julie always liked people watching. I then looked at the weather forecast for the following week. There's regular rainfall in New York all year round, bar the middle of winter when it snows. The weather is mixed the following week, but Thursday is going to be a really nice sunny day. I tell everyone that Thursday is Julie's day, the day we're going to scatter her ashes in Central Park. Little did I know that Thursday was going to be a day that I would never, ever forget.